Don't be daunted by the thickness of this rulebook or the apparent complexity of some of the rules, many of which are designed for exceptional creatures or war machines, or provide extra detail concerning weaponry, fighting in buildings, and so forth. The core of the rules are contained in the section up to and including the psychology section, and we suggest novice players ignore the sections beyond until they have fought at least one game. Assembled and undercoated, this is the War Games Orchard. Welcome to the show. My name is Nathan, and today I have part two of the Warhammer Starter Box Breakdown to present to you. In the last part, myself and Scott looked at the starter products for Warhammer 40,000, from 2nd edition all the way up to 9th edition. In today's episode, we look at the starter products of Warhammer Fantasy, from 4th edition in 1992 all the way up to 8th edition in 2010. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to part two of our Warhammer Starter Box Breakdown. Today, it's all Warhammer Fantasy. We're going to start in 4th edition and make our way to 8th edition here. And this one, I think, is going to have some real contenders. And maybe it's just going to be my own personal bias here, but I feel like my overall scores are going to rise for these ones, even if that's not necessarily justified. I've already penciled in the 5th edition starter at 14 out of 10, so definitely fair and balanced look these starter boxes.
We are talking about fantasy here. Yeah,
it's very true. All right, so we need to head on back into the mists of time 28 years ago to the very first starter box released by Games Workshop for 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy. This came out in 1992. The contents of this box were 20 High Elf Spearmen, 20 High Elf Archers, 32 Goblin Spearmen, and 32 Goblin Archers. Games Workshop did something rather funky with this first set. I think they may have felt bad about their ability to put models in this box, so they gave us more card stock punch-out models than any time in history here. So they gave us a card High Elf Bolt Thrower, a card Eltharion, which is the elf lord on his griffin. They gave us a card Shaman, Orc Shaman on a Wyvern. They gave us a card Grom the Paunch on his battle chariot, and they gave us a card Orc Catapult as well.
Mm-hmm.
Along with this, we got a little bit of card scenery. I am a huge fan of the old card stock scenery. I think it is ultra charming. I thought it was a really good way to provide some kind of big 3D scenery pieces as well, which is really nice. So we got very similar to what we'll see in the 5th edition box, but different designs. We got a card tower and a card house as well.
Those are awesome.
They're really good. Alongside that, we get a rule book, a bestiary, and a scenario book entitled The Battle for Mogathrond Pass. This was all themed around Grom the Paunch's invasion of Ulthuan. So you got some scenarios that included the battles kind of on the, I guess, outskirts of, what is that High Elf city? Is it Tor Ivres? The one that Eltharion lives in? The one that got...
I just read that. I think you're right.
Yeah. The points get a little weird for this box set, because if we're looking at just the minis, the High Elves clock in at 440 points and the Goblins at 208 points. Sounds it is familiar. Not even close. This set does get a little bit closer in points value, though, when you start bringing in like the card stuff. The High Elves with cards clock in at 940 points. Eltharion eats up most of those.
Yeah.
The Goblins with cards clock in at 863 points. 863.5, sorry, points. Including, now, this is where I took some liberties in trying to get the Goblins a little bit more even with the Elves. I included the shaman riding the Wyvern as a champion shaman. Which is a level 2 shaman. It just seemed a little bit more fair, considering you get Altharion on the elf side. And I also upgraded the catapult. There, in the 4th edition Orc and Goblin book, there are two choices for catapult. There's basically a small and a large catapult. And I used the points value from the large catapult to get this. Yeah, so this took a little bit of finagling on my part. It's still very much a high elf advantage in this set.
I would say so. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, from the get-go right away, and if you have to start really finagling that much, you run into problems.
I mean, you get 12 more goblin spearmen and 12 more goblin archers than you get high elf archers, actual miniature wise. And that is really not enough to make up the disparity between high elves
and good when they're running away, eh?
No. And considering this might be the only time where we see a starter box that featured one side that had a special rule where they feared the other side.
I know, right?
Yeah. So, in case, I don't know, did this continue on throughout
fantasy? Just for you guys out there, goblins fear elves because they stink funny.
They stink. Yeah, they're too tall and they stink funny.
They stink funny. That does carry throughout. Is it 6th edition? Definitely 6th edition.
Definitely 6th. Yeah, I don't know if it made it all the way to 8th, but it definitely does continue on through, at least in the fluff, I know, as well. This set was very much the basis that you see the following year's Warhammer 40,000 second edition set parrot in a lot of ways. You have kind of the more elite force and then the horde force. I think they did the numbers a little bit better in the second edition box set than they did in this one, where at least the orcs have a very clear numbers advantage. You get 24 more goblins than high elves, and that's not a whole lot. The cards are great, and they definitely add some value to this set. Allows you to play with some different units, some flying units, some war machines, even a couple special characters, which we don't really see beyond this set. I think this one is probably one of the weaker Warhammer fantasy sets, despite how charming it was, in that the sides are just nowhere close to each other.
Again, super early on, they're not sure what they're doing. You know, they're kind of,
But a lot of good things here that we will see. They do include some terrain for us. They do give us a nice scenario book. I am a fan of the books being broken up in the early days. I liked having the rule book and then the bestiary or the battle book, as it would become, and like a little scenario book. I found that it was just a little bit more approachable than the later editions kind of giant weighty tomes.
Yeah.
Though if you're just carrying them around game to game, I can see why you'd prefer just a single book as well. For me, it's a purely subjective thing that I like. I would take the two smaller books over the one big book.
Fair, by the way, they do fear elves in 8th, so it went all the way up.
It did go all the way up.
Yep. Wow, all goblins dislike fighting elves of any kind. Elves are haughty, unnatural, and stink funny, which is more than enough to unnerve such a cowardly race. Elves cause fear in units of goblins and night goblins.
Fantastic.
It's great. That's really cool.
So now to score 4th edition here. Man, I really want to... My biases are coming out here because I really think I'm might be overestimating this one. I'm going to go with a 6 out of 10 for this one.
Okay, yeah. I
think it's a good building point, but I think we saw better later on.
Yep, I'm right with you. 6 out of 10. It could be less, but I'm looking at, you know, 1992... they're just trying to get models. It's their first set, right?
Yeah.
I actually thought this was released for 3rd edition, but it is 4th, isn't it?
Somebody, it is 4th,
Okay, so yeah, it's definitely, like, it's a learning experience for everybody here. This is kind of their stepping. It reminds me of the 40K one.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between those first two sets. And they only came out a year apart. So they would have been probably working on the 40K set when this was this was released. I would rate that first 40K set a little bit better than this 4th ed set.
Right.
But that, again, they're very close. Now let's move on to the best of all things, which is the 5th edition starter set released in 1996, The Lizardmen vs. Bretonnia. and the entire reason why I am sitting here doing this podcast today, the box that I fell in love with. And going back through this and looking at, and I had never done a breakdown of this box before, because why would I? This one, it made me a little bit sad when I realized the disparity here.
Yeah.
But let's go through the contents first. So we get 12 Bretonian Knights of the Realm shown to us in two units, but you could do pretty much whatever you want there. 24 Bretonian Bowmen, 32 Lizardmen Skinks, 20 Saurus Warriors. For terrain, we got one card Tower, one card House, and one card Shed. These ones were a little bit bigger and a little bit better designed than the card stuff that we saw in the 4th edition set. They were just kind of a little bit newer. They had a little bit more parts that kind of stuck out, and they just a little bit better design overall there. We got two books. We got a rule book and a battle book. And as well as our normal dice and things, we also got magic item cards. And this wasn't a full magic item card set. It was kind of a get you started one. So it just took some of the cards from the magic supplement. A few magic weapons, a few magic armors, and some talismans and stuff. Just to get you kind of used to how magic worked in the early days.
Yeah.
The approximate point value for this set is Bretonia 660 points. And Lizardmen 476 points, and that is with the upgrade to poisoned bows for the skinks, because that was an auto include, because plus one to strength was fantastic on those.
Well, you're forgetting, you can't play with that army anyway. You need a slan, bro.
And you just hit on the kind of one of the poison pills in this set.
Yeah.
Is that for Bretonia, this is a pretty good starter set. Would have been really easy to just convert up a character out of this, or, you know, paint him a little differently, give him some gold armor or something, call him a Bretonian lord. Not a problem. The Lizardmen, however, if you wanted to play by the rules of the game, were unplayable out of this starter set.
Yeah.
You could not field a Lizardmen army in 5th edition without a Slan Mage Priest. Oh, that hurts. It really does.
I remember having this conversation. My friend bought this box set. His dad played Bretonians, and he played Lizardmen. And he got it, and he got the book, and he's like, you know, I need to order this Slan. And I'm like, oh, why? Because I'm playing Undead and stuff. We play anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we started to get into the mindset of, like, let's play this game. And,
yeah.
And he's like, I can't even play this game, this army legally. And my jaw kind of, like, hit the floor. I was like, oh, this is a very... This is an elite game here.
Yeah. From the lore perspective of 5th edition, it did make sense. However, was, as a game decision or as a design choice overall, it was very questionable that you needed. And the Slam Mage Priest was not a cheap model.
Oh my god, no.
He was easily, I think, $40 or $45 back in those days. I had to save up for quite some time. I did the same thing that you guys did, where I played against my best friend's high elves and we just ignored that. I made a Saurus hero.
Yeah.
And that would kind of lead my army. But it's,
and you still had fun.
Yeah, oh no, tons of fun. Absolutely. It is a bit of a bummer though, right? That you get this and one of these forces is a very small force, but a force that's very easy to play legally, you know, if you want to do 500 point games, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you add a couple heroes to this Bretonia list, actually at 660 points, you're probably scratching 1,000. Add a couple of heroes or that kind of thing. Yeah, that and how much does that kind of hurt its overall value as a starter? I wonder.
That's the question. $1 million question. Yeah.
The other thing is we see a fairly large disparity in the effectiveness of these forces. The Bretonians outrange the Lizardmen. They're always going to get the charge on any unit.
Mm-hmm.
However, you do have a very strong unit with the Lizardmen in the Skinks, especially if you're skirmishing with them. They are going to be minus one to hit. They are going to shoot back once they get in range at strength four, which can even give the knights a little bit of trouble.
That's true, yeah.
They rally very easily. If you're fleeing from the charges of the knights, it's actually kind of hard for the knights to get rid of you necessarily because of the cold-blooded rule.
So they have to keep pursuing, and then they...
So they have to keep pursuing.
That takes them away from the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good point.
The Lizardmen, I don't think it's like some of the ones that we looked at yesterday where it's just like this army has no chance in these starter matches. Mm-hmm. I think they do, but I think you'd have to play very well, which people picking up the starter box aren't always going to do because they're not familiar with the game.
Right.
Man, I want to rate this thing so much higher. I don't think I can give it a better score than the fourth edition box set because it has a lot of those same problems that the fourth edition set has. And there's not, I mean, the forces are different, but there's not too much difference overall in how these boxes were put together. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10, though, because my bias won't allow me to go lower than that.
Yep, no,
and
that's
in my heart, it's still a 25 out of 10.
Yesterday, I was like, we need a nostalgia category as well.
We do.
It's like, yeah.
All of the scores are over 10, though. That's
no kidding.
Don't know how well that works. Yeah, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, this one's when I started playing. I guess for me, I watched my buddy and his father buy this box and split on it. I'm like, where's my box?
Where's my dead box, guys?
Don't worry. It's coming.
It's coming.
I'm pretty patient. I'm glad. I loved the Lizardmen. I was, my buddy started painting them and I was like, those are the coolest. And the knights were just so classic. Knowing much about fantasy, I'm like,
yeah.
Those are sweet knights.
One of my greatest regrets in all of the things that I've done in the hobby was I had those knights for years and years, and I even had a couple of like neat special characters. Never had a full army or anything, mm-hmm. but I had Rapance de Lyonesse, the not Joan of Arc of Bretonnia.
Yep.
And I had a really nice hero on Pegasus as well. And a couple of like the damsels for spell casting. And I sold that lot several years ago. Because I was just like, when am I ever going to use this?
Oh my God.
And now I would love to just take the time, fix them up.
Yep.
Paint them real nice, make little pennants for all their lances, like all the stuff that I've learned how to do in the last several years.
Did you hear that out there, folks? Send Nathan those models. Come on.
Yeah. You just have those lying around somewhere. Please feel free. Yeah, it's one of those things that, man, don't sell stuff lightly unless it's absolutely meaningless to you. Is I guess the advice.
I regret
out of that.
I regret much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And honestly, any podcast that I listen to, people have those stories, right? We've all done it. And I'm sure everyone listening to this regrets something that they've traded or sold or that kind of thing. It is what it is. Maybe someday I'll find a lot of Bretonnians for a reasonable price and I'll get those models again. But unfortunate.
Yeah, for me, that's model count, slant aside, first introduction, terrain, magic cards. Pretty cool set. Yeah, it's gonna get at least minimum 7.
All right,
I'll give it a 7 as well. I mean, it's got a lot of charm, and
it had tons and tons of charm, right? It's any of those Hero Hammer era boxes, the second ed 40k, mm-hmm. the fourth and the fifth ed. They were bright, they were so colorful, they were really just a joy to get in your hands, and me as a kid as well, right? Like that was just mm-hmm. that was everything. All right, before I spend the rest of eternity talking about how much I love 5th edition and that box, let's move on to 6th edition. This was released in the summer of 2000. New Millennium, New Warhammer Fantasy. This was, of course, the large reboot in tone and look of Warhammer Fantasy. We got super grimdark super quick, and we got what I consider a very good starter box.
Oh my God, yeah.
So our contents here... This was Empire versus Orcs. Starting with the Orcs, we had a Orc war boss on Boar. We have 18 Orc boys with two hand weapons. We have 16 orc arrow boys. We have one orc chariot. On the Empire side, we have one Empire general on a warhorse, 18 spearmen, 16 handgunners, one great cannon. We had a single piece of terrain, which was a card building that was a little bit of a hybrid. It was a card building that had kind of plastic joints to hold it together.
Yeah, the bricks.
Yeah. It was like a brick. It was a ruined tower. It was pretty cool, honestly. And then we got our big boy rule book.
Oh, yeah.
The approximate point values on these guys were Empire 439 to Orcs 429. This was a very close in point value.
This was the this was a thought out box set.
This was a very well thought out set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're looking at the era of 6th edition and Mordheim are kind of like cousins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the terrain in the 6th edition box set there is very similar, like the same. It's the same, like you said, the joints and the supports.
Yeah, you could you could slap that down on a Mordheim table. You'd never know.
Yeah, exactly.
If it was a Mordheim table from
in fact,
era.
We did. Yeah. We did use that. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a set that I think very highly of, just in how well they matched the units and unit types that you were going to use in this one. We see we've got an orc infantry unit. We've got a Empire infantry unit. We have a ranged unit for both sides, and we have a war machine for both sides, and each side gets its own mounted hero or lord level character.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, the symmetry in this set is very appealing to me. My only concern is I feel like the Empire has a slight advantage here with the cannon over the chariot, especially where cannons are a very hard counter to chariots.
Oh my god, one hit. Yeah.
One hit, yeah. Beyond that, though, I don't see a lot of problem here. The Empire handgunners are quite good, but then I think the orcs have the advantage in the like the actual infantry unit fight with their two hand weapons, their additional point of toughness. I think it's a good, it's a fairly good match overall. I feel like if you were going to have starter box games with any set, this is a prime candidate for it.
Yeah.
And it does something important in that it gives you the multiple different types of units to try out. Artillery, a chariot, ranged, you know, heroes. It hits all of the major unit types in the game other than, you know, maybe flyers, right?
Right. I think my friend Devin and I played this out, or his father collected orcs. And I think we played this out a few times, and it's like, who's going first? It makes it, this is the classic example of how six would work, where if you get that first punch, it means a lot. It means a lot. So you'd we'd go back and forth. Sometimes the orcs would win. And then if that cannon somehow misses the chariot.
You're in business. Yeah.
The problem with the chariot is it only moves 7.
Right.
It charges 14.
The boars aren't fast. Yeah.
Yeah. It charges 14, but you need that you need that kind of like initial move to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're 12 inches away, and all of a sudden it's, you know, you're 19 up. The cannon's going to be strategically placed in a corner, you know, because it can just go wherever. I think the advantage does go to the Empire there.
It's not an overwhelming advantage,
no.
Right? Like if
no,
you're playing
good...
the orcs, you don't feel like you're just completely without a chance of winning.
Totally.
This is one as well that didn't give us any kind of themed scenario booklet or anything like that. I'm willing to forgive it for 6th ed because those forces were as evenly matched as I think we'll see here.
You also get the book, which
you
has
do,
scenarios
you do get the
in
book.
It.
Yeah.
So you can
That's
play
true.
The scenarios in there. Yeah.
Just looking at something for a beginner just to get
I
you
get
through
it.
Like the movement, those kind of thing. You know, the little friendly booklets. We didn't have one of those, but again, I don't mind that in this set. Definitely better than the set out at the same time for 40K, which is the third edition one, which was
our
lowest ranking of the 40K sets. This is one that I think very highly of. I'm gonna go ahead and give this one an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very solid in pretty much every regard. Maybe would have liked two pieces of terrain there, but I'm not going to complain much. Yeah. That tower was quite good.
I agree. Beyond it's kind of like, why did you just give us this one, you know? If you're going to give us this piece of terrain, make it one for per side or
even
an orc hut or something.
Yeah, something else, right? I agree with that. But I don't have a lot of criticisms for this.
So we ended up buying three of those sets.
Nice.
This is my first second army. So the Empire, I decided, you know, my buddy's playing Lizardmen and Chaos. It was all about like the fluffy game where you're human, 1 minute to midnight, they're coming, you know, the Battle of Kislev, you know, stuff like that. And my God, I had fun with this box set. We had, our small community was like three people. So us buying three boxes, we all had a book. We all got a book out of there. And then Devin's father, Daryl, and I had a big army of Orcs versus Empire right away. Just, it's such a good box set for buying a few things to muster your army. It had that captain on horse. And
you make a really good point there that I hadn't considered when I was doing the rating here, which was basically buying and splitting it. What is the advantage there? The value is
incredible.
The value is incredible. This is one that you really do want to buy two boxes of because you can use everything in there. And if you're looking at doubling up any of this stuff, none of it is a terrible choice.
No, two cannons.
You're looking at core units for the Empire. You get two cannons. Oh no, not two cannons. Not what am I going to do with those?
Yeah, 90 points.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with multiple chariots. That's just an insurance, right? That one of them actually makes it to the enemy.
Yeah.
And yeah, other than that, you've just got useful core units that you can either expand on or run multiples of. Even the heroes, because they were rather generic, could have easily just been pinned on to a Reichsguard unit or a, you know, an Orc Boar Boys unit, or as a secondary heroes, because both of those armies have fairly cheap heroes.
This is a hard one for me because of other box sets, but I really want to give it a 9 because of my history with it.
It's a contender. It's
really, yeah, I'm in between 8 and 9, but I'll just say 9.
You could do an 8.5. There's no rule.
True,
against that.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
8.5. Yeah, all right, and I've got it at an 8.
Yeah, it's just really good.
Cool.
Oh, just so you know, 6th edition. Do you want me to discuss I have a 6th edition. It's not an army box set, but it's a limited box run. Do you want me to talk about the vampire one?
Yeah, now, yeah, or, hit us with
so
it.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a story. I started in 5th edition, so I have my undead book. In 99, the Vampire Counts book releases, and I'm playing 5th with that. That's still my favorite Vampire Counts book. But I think it's 2001, the 6th ed book comes out for Vampire Counts. Christmas comes, and I get a gift certificate for Odyssey 2000. Do you remember that story?
I remember Odyssey 2000, yep.
It was originally down in Barrington, but at the time... I think it was on Quinpool in 2001. So I got this gift certificate. I can't remember. It was probably like $100 or something. I'm just like freaking out because I know, you know, it's going to go to Warhammer. This is like my prime time. Our prime time is the year 99 plus for fantasy. And obviously they're not open Christmas Day, but I'm thinking maybe they're open Boxing Day. I'm going to call them and see what they have. So I wait till Boxing Day. I'm putting together Mordheim terrain at the time because I just got that box set.
Nice.
Beautiful. That's a whole other story. That's one of the most amazing hobby experiences of my life is that Mordheim box set. Yeah. So I call them and they're like, yeah, we have, we got this Vampire Counts box set in. And I'm like, oh, what's this? It has, and they list off the things and I'll list it off for you right now. It's the Black Coach, 8 Black Knights, the metal ones with the skeletal horses. It's 3 spirit hosts, 3 giant bats, 3 bat swarms. There is Graveguard, zombie skeletons, and 2 vampires. And there's actually, I think there's even a Banshee, I believe, or a Wraith, one of the, I can't remember. I have these models still, but. And I'm like, whoa. And he's like, oh yeah, and the book's in there. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, the new 6th edition Vampire Counts book is actually in this box set. And I'm just like... can you hold it for me? I'll be right there. This is 2 hour drive away and there's a snowstorm. I'm mental about this box. Like, I was shaking. And I did the dumb thing. And I drove to Halifax, 2-hour drive from the country. This is Wallace, Nova Scotia. Population 100.
Like, I thought you were going to say population you. I don't think I've ever heard of it.
Exactly. The concentration, man, I can still feel it. I'm just like going through the storm. Halifax is the dumbest thing you could ever do. But I had to do it. I had to do it. I even remember going through the slush in Halifax, trying to find a parking spot, like off of Quinpool or whatever, and like running into the thing, taking a deep breath, going, oh, I made it. And here this, I wish I could find a picture online of it. And I wish I saved the box. It was this great big box. It was about $175. But you get an army of undead. The value was probably close to $300 or maybe more. I get it. I open it there to make sure the components are all there. And I grab the book. The cover is really good. It's that green and the blood dragon on the cover with the black knights. Remember that?
Yes, yes. That was really well done.
I love the artwork's crazy. I think the sixth ed cover is my favorite for like style. And the ninth book overall is my favorite. The fifth book overall, Vampire Counts, is my favorite internally, the art and stuff. But that cover, it's that blood dragon screaming across the battlefield with the black knights behind him, is me and my car charging to get that box set, you know.
Awesome.
That is, like you said, that's a 25 out of 10 box set. And I don't think anyone can rate it otherwise, because it's just, it's got everything. It's got the book and... Yeah, probably one of the craziest purchases of Warhammer I've ever done. I wouldn't be able to rest. I was so impatient to get that. It's pretty crazy how I can still feel the pull of my car on the snow.
Wow.
trying to get through there. It was, don't do this. Don't do this, folks. Don't do that.
That's an incredible story. I love taking your life into your own hands.
Like, literally, you had what to am get I that doing? Box set. Yeah, what am I doing? Like, come on. But yeah, no, it was just, it had to happen.
I remember the sets of the era. They were really well done.
Yeah.
And those, the limited edition ones that came out with the armies were always so good because, yeah, you got the book, you got a ton of models. Just comparing it to the boxes that they do nowadays, you know, they're pale shadows of
right.
kind of the value you used to get, which is a little sad, but I do understand if I had been in your shoes... I'd have probably been doing the same thing.
So. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just, we purchase things very similar. It's like, no, we're not going to wait for that. You know?
So 7th edition brings us to the Battle for Skull Pass. This was released in 2006. We have Dwarves versus Goblins. The contents are one Dwarf Thane, one Dwarf Dragon Slayer, 12 Dwarf Warriors, 10 Dwarf Thunderers, 8 Dwarven Miners, and one Dwarf Cannon. On the Night Goblin side, we have a Night Goblin Boss, a Night Goblin Shaman, 20 Night Goblins with Spears, 20 Night Goblins with Bows, 10 Spider Riders, and a Troll. We also get Scenario Terrain, which is for the dwarves. They had the King's Wall, the Grudge Pony and its cart, and a captured Troll Slayer. The goblins had a Idol of Mork. The approximate points value for these guys put the dwarves at 550 points and the goblins at 462 points. This set kind of coincides with the Assault on Black Reach in 40K. So this one would have come out just, I believe, a couple of years before that. So it was 2008 for Black Reach.
Yeah,
let me just
right.
double check here. Yes. And there's a lot of design choices that are similar. This box, I consider it another contender for top of the heap here. And I remember getting at least two, maybe three of these sets. I think it was a better deal for the goblins than the dwarves. And just in the selection of units you got, because of course you could always use more night goblins, and eventually, like, you could make a whole unit of trolls if you got three of these things. The spider riders were useful. It was a really good set for multiple purchases. Even for the dwarves, it wasn't too bad because you get a nice big block of warriors.
The problem was the miners. So, as much as, seriously, miners are easily one of my favorite units, especially fluff-wise. But, you'd lose out because you don't want... If that was, like, Ironbreakers or something, you'd be like, yes.
Yes, please.
For sure.
Yeah, or even Hammerers, I think.
Oh, God.
Would have been a choice. The miners, I agree with you on the look of them, and I love their fluff. I always loved the look of the models as well. I love, like, the candles on the tops of their helmets.
Yeah.
The fact that they go into battle with just big old miners' picks. A really, really cool aesthetic. Right. I think they have always kind of been the odd dwarves out.
Yeah, I agree.
In that there's generally better choices that do what they do and do it a little bit better. Although... Eventually, I think they got some interesting deployment shenanigans in later editions. I don't know if they would have had it in 7th ed, but really I think 8th ed, they could do some Vanguard stuff or tunneling and that kind of thing.
Blasting charges, man.
Oh, yes. I forgot about the blasting charges.
8th edition, and they have that steam drill from 7th carried over. But for me, it's like, I'll Vanguard behind you and throw some blasting charges, or even just get in your rear.
Mm-hmm.
That game versus Jesse, I got in behind a bunch of Tomb Kings. Even if they didn't do anything, they were such a distraction. He had to think about where he was going to place his big block of guys, because if I just charge the rear, I get one good melee combat, right? And the theory of miners was always great, but I think they really shine in 8th.
Yeah, this set hits a lot of the things that I like about starter sets, or good starter sets, in that you got a excellent scenario booklet that gave you things that you could play through. It had the supporting terrain to make those scenarios more interesting, give you a reason to build those terrain pieces and use them and see how they interact with the units in the game. Yeah, there's not a lot here that I can find fault with. I would have liked some more scenery terrain, because all of the terrain was fairly small. And, some of it, like the Grudge Pony and that kind of thing, you're only going to use with that scenario. The little Idol of Mork, though, is a really nice kind of just fun terrain piece to plop down somewhere. Unfortunately, it is very, very small, though. What do you think of this set as far as balance between the two forces go?
I like how you avoided. I was ready to cut this box set apart in another way, but you somehow dodged the right. You did that. You said the right question. I have problems with this box set, but as far as points, the Warriors, the Thunderers. Oh man, I really feel like for a change, the Orcs and Goblins come up, or the Goblins come out on top a bit, and it's probably because of their mobility on the Spider Riders. If I'm a dwarf, I am a dwarf player. When I'm a dwarf player, I'm going to make sure I shoot those spider riders.
Yeah, they're going to be priority number one, I think.
Yeah, so the problem is the panic check. If the spider riders make their panic check, they're probably going to hit home.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I think about it, I think it's pretty balanced, yeah.
Yeah, the way
the points are telling us something, I think they're close.
Yeah, they're definitely so the dwarves are at 550 and the goblins are at 462.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't a huge advantage in points for the dwarves, a little under 100 points. And that depends too on how you're outfitting things, of course. Mm-hmm. If you pump up the goblin shaman a little bit, or the night goblin, make him a big boss instead of a regular boss.
I don't know why that just popped in my head. Pump up the shaman, pump up the shaman. It's like, I don't know why that entered my head. It's like, pump up that wagon.
Yeah.
dance.
This is a set that I think you're probably going to be able to play with a reasonable expectation that either side could win.
Yeah. Again, first turn, and there's now, a lot of things.
I'm guessing you owned this at some point, being a dwarf player, or did you?
You're gonna love this story.
Okay.
Love it. You're gonna love it. Okay. So I didn't like this box set. Years ago, this box set comes out, and I'll tell you why right away. I'm a dwarf. At this time, my third army is dwarves. And I'm like, what are they doing? The models to me were so, so bad. The quality. You have to understand, I have all pewter at this time. Like, the 90%, nice dwarves, 90% of my army is pewter. The miners, they're pewter. And I'm like, what are they doing? They were look too monopose. And I was really disappointed in the quality. I thought, to me, at the time, it's like, oh, wow, they're really cheaping out. And then I'd look at the goblin side. And I'm like, wow, yeah, they seem to, those work much better. Although the plastic seems cheaper to me. There's less, like in the Empire, the 6th edition one, there was a lot of more customization because you're putting the arms on. And there's the like there's no posing in this one. It's easy to play. And at that time, I didn't care about easy to play. It was more like, I want quality minis. Mm-hmm. So I never, this is the funny part. I just got this set now. Like, and I thought you might get a kick out of that. I got the set early 2020 when we were starting, you know, when we were playing together.
Yeah.
So just kind of, yeah. Like we started playing in 2019 and, this buddy of mine, Will, he's like, yeah, I have this, the dwarf half. And then I look at them and it became this fun painting project where the lower quality mini, I'm using some painting techniques I haven't to make them seem, you know, I'm keeping the black primer in there. I'm not painting over a lot of this black primer because it's making the shadow and the shade.
So it gives you a neat opportunity to try some things out on models that you're not super hot on to begin with.
And now I love them.
Okay.
So my love, like the, it's a weird trend. I didn't like it at all at first. I would still, I'm not going to rate it high because of the, like my original, I still think the models aren't as good quality as like the other sets.
As we will
find out in 8th edition because it's mind blowing, but that's my kind of take on that.
Interesting. I'm really glad you touched on the quality thing with the dwarves.
Yeah.
Having this set, and I split this set a bunch of times for all of the goblins.
Oh, your value is decent, yeah.
And because the value is decent, for sure. And this wasn't a super expensive set either. It was a really cheap way to get into the game. For the goblins, I thought the quality was stellar. I thought it was everything you wanted from these very little guys, right? They weren't super complex. They shouldn't have been super complex.
I agree, yeah.
I really like a miniature that has an appropriate level of detail,
which
I think sometimes, especially nowadays, we get things that are over-designed for the sake of being over-designed. These weren't that, which was really nice. The dwarves, something went wrong. And most of them, like, I've seen them painted to look quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure once you get yours all done, like you said, you like them a lot better, right?
I love them.
With a good paint scheme on them.
But back then, I had no idea what I was doing.
One of the sculpts, and I think you know which one I'm going to talk about here,
is just
so utterly bizarre. Like, it doesn't look like Warhammer. It's really bad and strange, and it might be the worst starter box mini of all time for Games Workshop. And I'm talking about the Dwarf Slayer here.
Yeah.
What happened? Because the Dwarf Slayers are, firstly, they're iconic. They are some of the most recognizable Warhammer Fantasy models and aesthetic. That orange-haired, half-naked dwarf thing has even made its way into other fantasy properties, right? Like, it's such a strong, silly, but fun look for dwarves. And this is their chance, because the Slayers had always been in metal, and they were always great. They were very strong sculpts.
I have, like, you know, 43 metal.
Every dwarf
minis are amazing.
Every dwarf player I've ever met has like 60 Slayers because they're just like, I just kept buying them.
I can't not buy these.
Yeah, I used to play a guy who ran the Storm of Chaos list for dwarves, nice. That Slayer army.
Yeah.
And it was a blast, and he loved them. Like, they were his pride and joy. They're fantastic. And then we get this dwarf, this scraggly, scrawny, weirdly proportioned Slayer that doesn't even really look like a Warhammer dwarf. I would love to ask someone in the studio just guys, what happened with this particular model?
Okay, so something is coming to mind about that. I think, for some reason, I seem to remember that being a model that they gave, like, a newer, kind of a noob. Here's you know, do this one sculpt. I have a feeling that's how it went, but I can't, don't quote me on that. I feel like it was one of those things, because it doesn't look like anything like the other, to me, anyway.
No.
I seem to remember reading that.
That's interesting.
It was a different, yeah.
But at the same time, you got to think that them doing basic quality control would have been like, okay, well, that one didn't quite come out. Let's try it again, right? Giving it to a new sculptor, and you got to give new sculptors stuff, absolutely. But I don't know that you have to release it.
For me also, it goes with, what's my least favorite edition? 7. It just, I don't know. There's something about 7 that just, that's the edition I played the least of.
That's probably true for me as well.
Yeah.
It would be a toss-up between 7th and 8th, because I was big on 8th to start with, and then as things emerged and as kind of hordes and stuff took over, I didn't like it after that. But 7th was 6th. I felt like 7th was 6th with the flavor dialed back.
Yeah.
It removed a lot of the fun, spicy stuff that we saw in 6th. A lot of my problem with 7th stems more from the army books, I think, than the core rules.
Yeah, for sure.
Not my favorite edition. And maybe it was all this Dwarf Slayer. Maybe it was just...
it was his fault.
They were just like, oh, well, you know, the whole thing's gone to pot now. We might as well just phone it in. We'll get it right on the next one.
And it's weird how, like, that added to my dislike of 7th was that box set. Everything was off to me about it. It was like, oh, this box set's not very good. Mm. And I changed, you know, I started to experiment with other games then, too. So I was like... 7th wasn't my jam. I thought Warhammer was doomed with 7. I hated 7. And then my buddy I think it was 2010, early 2010, he heard the rumor. This new spark came back to me. I taught some new people how to play. And yeah, unfortunately, 8th has problems.
It does.
But it was better than 7th, in my opinion. Because there's more people that like 8th than 7th, like a lot more.
Yeah. From what I've seen online, just exploring the various communities for Warhammer... You have the Hero Hammer players that like 4th and 5th, where those editions kind of bled into each other. You can kind of get away with doing both or either, and you can kind of use all of the books for either as well. It all works. You have the 6th edition players, and then you have the 8th edition players. I have yet to come across, and not that I've been looking for it hard, so if you're a member of a 7th edition Warhammer Fantasy community, more power to you. Nothing wrong with liking what you like.
There's just less of you.
There's just less. There just seems to be less of you. And
for reasons. The army books,
for reasons. And one thing I will give 7th edition a big shout out for, though, is we got our special characters back after 6th.
And insane courage.
And insane courage, which I've used to great effect.
Yeah, remember
always,
that?
Always
Nathan?
Love insane courage.
Remember?
Oh, I
remember
do.
That game? It was your ogres? So just really quick, I'm like, we're... at this time, we're still playtesting our Orchard Edition, which is 6th edition core rules with 8th army books. And we get to this break test, and I'm like, oh, and Nathan's like, insane. Is there insane courage? And I think, you know what? I don't think there is in 6th, but I think we should have it. So yeah, let's do it for this game. And
your
freaking rules.
We're go ahead and roll it.
go ahead and roll it. And he freaking rolls Snake Eyes. And I'm just like, of course. That actually lost me the game.
I think it did.
There was some regrets. You were actually kicking my ass, and then I came back, and I broke that big unit with your BSV, and my dwarves, of course, couldn't chase you down. No, they chased the other unit down, but then I was like, yeah, let's do the break test, and you passed it, and I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe that just happened. Yeah, the fate, right? Fun time. That was a great game. God, that was a good game.
So we're getting to the hard part here. How do you want to score the 7th edition box? I think I'm going to be probably more generous than you are.
Yeah.
As a non-dwarf player and as someone who didn't really have to deal with those dwarf
models. Yeah, yeah.
I like this set as a starter product. I think it hits almost all of the notes here, despite, some of the things that we've hit on as issues here. As an overall starter product, I think it's very strong, and I think I'm going to match the 6th edition set at an 8 out of 10 here.
Cool.
Yeah, how much has it offended you that...
Yeah, no, yeah. I'll give you, like, back in the day, I'm giving it a 3.
Okay.
But right now,
mm-hmm.
it's going to get a 6.
All right, I think that's a fair assessment.
3-point increase is huge, right?
That is like, a big jump, yeah.
And it's, you know, the reasons are, the goblin side's amazing. You do get good value. It was an easy pickup for new players.
Yes, yeah, it was a good product for that.
Like, I was always telling new people, like, oh, what should we do? And I'm always like, take a look at the... If you're thinking of armies, think of the box sets. If you don't know... Like, if you don't have all the metal minis of dwarves I have, and you look at... For the first time, you're looking at this Battle for Skull Pass, they're pretty cool, you know? Like, but, I mean, I can show you right now the inconsistency of scale. The dwarf Battle for Skull Pass canon is so off-scale. There's some just a lot of off-scale stuff.
The dwarf stuff seemed... small.
Yes, which exactly.
I mean, obviously it's dwarf stuff, but, no, but for the dwarf yeah, line even, no. it seemed like it was smaller. Maybe that was a scaling issue with how much they wanted to pack into this set.
True.
Because this really kicked off the era of getting a lot of miniatures in starter sets.
Right.
And I wonder if that was part of it, not to make excuses because yeah, those dwarves weren't the quality they should have been. Yeah, overall though, I think we got some good scores for this one. Now we finish things off. It's 8th edition, Island of Blood, released in 2010. The contents for this are one High Elf Noble on Griffin, one High Elf Mage, 10 Swordmasters of Hoth, 10 Lothern Seaguard, 5 Illyrian Reavers, and on the Skaven side, a Skaven Warlord, a Warlock Engineer, 40 Clan Rats, 2 Rat Ogres, 1 Poisoned Wind Mortar Team, 1 Warp Fire Thrower, 1 Clan Molder Packmaster, a Rulebook and a Scenario Book. And I should mention about the Clan Rats, I believe you could give them either spears or hand weapons for all of them. So there was a little bit of customization there.
Mm-hmm.
This is an approximate point value. So Skaven come in around 700 points. And the High Elves come in around 725 points. This box was a big jump in quality.
Dude.
From the previous editions. I don't think either of us are going to have any complaints about the quality of models on either side of this.
I'm willing to bet our complaints are the same, but I think we're going to give it different numbers.
Yeah. One interesting thing that I didn't realize until I was going through and totaling these points for these armies, the High Elf Force is not a legal army in a couple of ways.
Yep.
It doesn't include enough core choices to meet the 25% minimum requirements, and the High Elf on Griffin is actually either too many Lord or Hero points for the size of game that you'd be playing with these sets. That's not a huge deal if you're just playing, you know, starter box games and you're not worrying about it. However, it's a little bit odd that they chose to do this when, as the first edition that was going back to the classic percentage system, that they would include a force that really doesn't work under that percentage system. The Skaven set has no such problems, of course. You can fit all sorts of stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I like this set a lot. It was a very attractive set. I think it probably got a lot of people who were on the fence into the game. You got a lot of value here, and as at least on the Skaven side, this was all stuff that you wanted in a force.
Yep.
Like, I don't think there was really a bad choice there. I don't know how good Rat Ogres were on the whole, but I think they were certainly usable.
Rat Ogres are amazing.
Yeah. You did get this scenario book that would take you through using and getting used to the game and different scenarios that didn't use all of the forces. It also kind of helped balance that Griffin, because I remember there was a couple, or at least one of the scenarios towards the end of the booklet where the Griffin comes in, but he doesn't come in right away. So you're not using him the full game, because otherwise he's a little bit much for the Skaven to deal with. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this box set?
It's funny, I never even thought about the percentage problem, and I forgot about it. But the biggest complaint is, to me, because you can play, you know, with points off and stuff. It's not fun as much to play when you never get your book. Skaven never got a book.
That's a good point.
When they released this set, the High Elf book wasn't even out. There was a seventh High Elf book. This was a set designed later, late seventh. You know, it didn't come out for seventh, but it was definitely during seventh. And yeah, Skaven never received an eighth book. Their FAQ is huge for them in eighth. Like, it's another book.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest complaint. Other than that, this is probably the best box set they've ever released.
It was very, very push strong.
Fit.
Yeah.
It's push fit.
Yeah.
Like, when I got that, I was like, how in the name of God? Like, I was just so impressed.
Well, just looking at the contents here, you're getting infantry units. You're getting monstrous infantry units. You're getting, admittedly small, but still war machines here. You're getting a hero character on a flying monstrous mount. You're getting mages. This is a little full game of Warhammer. You even got fast cavalry in there. This is going to give you a small but full experience, which is really cool. I do take your point about the army books not being out. That is a big detriment, especially for someone just getting into the game. And if you were getting in at launch, would you have tried to wait for that Skaven army book that never came, as opposed to getting the 7th ed one, if you thought that was going to happen?
Think about a new player, and you have to buy this Skaven book and print a 20-page FAQ document to play them.
Yeah, that's hard. That's asking a lot.
Yeah.
That's a good point, and I feel like, I don't know how well this plays if you're just putting all of the contents on a table. Mm-hmm. And trying it, I think the Griffin really skews things. I don't think the Skaven are necessarily entirely out of luck.
No, I think the Skaven are stronger, actually.
Do you think the Skaven take most of these?
It's because you just make them slaves or something. There's a lot of play you could do. There's a lot of stupid rules for Skaven. You could just destroy those High Elves. And there is a kind of a little war machine there, too.
Yeah, there's two, because you get the Warp Fire Thrower and the Poisoned Wind Mortar team.
Well, there you go.
So
yeah, I think the Skaven come out on top just because of numbers.
Mm. And it was definitely a numbers game in 8th edition as opposed to any kind of heroes tilting the scale. Mm. Yeah, you're probably right on that one. I gotta ask you, what was your favorite of the two sets here? Because they were both so well designed. I love what they did with the Skaven. I thought the Skaven were really good. I'm not a huge fan of 8th edition clan rats on the whole. Not that there's anything wrong with them. Just the way they're posed, I don't know. I like them a little bit less than some of the earlier versions of clan rats. But again, that's purely subjective. And I think from a design standpoint, they're clearly the best.
I think the clan rats are amazing.
However, I loved the rat ogres we got in this set. Yeah. The Skaven warlord and the engineer were great. They had tons of character. The Warp Fire Thrower team, not huge on, but I love the Poison Wind Mortar team. And the only reason I don't like the Warp Fire Thrower team is because I love the long-serving metal Warp Fire Thrower that went kind of 4th Ed Hero Hammer all the way to, I think, 7th. Pretty much until this box came and replaced it. And with all that being said, the High Elves are hands down the ones that I think are the best models. The Illyrian Reavers were beautiful. The High Elf, so nice. The guy on Griffin being a snap together Griffin character.
It's crazy.
The Swordmasters were glorious. The Swordmasters were updated. They were a little bit bigger, but when you put them beside the metal ones, you didn't really notice.
Right.
And they kept that strong aesthetic. It's a simple, clean. The Swordmasters, I always think, look so dangerous. They are the quintessential High Elf unit for me, so I was glad to see them do such a good job on them.
They're better in Orchard Edition, just so you know. They are. They're better. Yeah, striking first on the charge? Okay, then.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I feel like I'm just kind of celebrating this box set. I don't really have a lot of complaints about it. My one big complaint that I've had throughout all this is that I would have liked to have seen some terrain. This didn't have terrain.
Right.
Other than that, though, I mean, really, for a starter box to introduce you to the game, its concepts, and to kind of get you excited about it, I don't know how you do better than this.
I agree. I gave one of my buddies, he's like, listen, he's very hesitant. I've never done this before, but I've seen you do it a few times. Like, I'm kind of interested in getting into painting miniatures. And I was like, you know, but a long time friend saying that,
yeah,
is like, when do we start?
Yeah.
So, you know, with all the models we have, you and I and other people, he has no clue how much stuff I can give him, right? Like, I can give, mm-hmm. get you started with some brushes. So I collected 7 Island of Bloods since.
since
last November, I think.
This wasn't even since they came out. This is just in the time that I've known you.
Yeah.
You've collected 7 Island of Bloods.
Yeah. So a year. And of course, that means 7 griffins. So it's Oprah Winfrey again. You've got a griffin. So I give him the griffin. He's been buying those really cheap minis, WizKid minis, those awful, awful detailed minis, and painting those, and they have no detail at all, and he's just practicing anyway. It's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah.
He's enjoying it. But then I hand him this griffin, and you want to hear a 39-year-old man gasp like he's 9 years old. It was literally what I just did. And he said, this is the most gorgeous thing I've ever... Especially going from those awful minis to this, yeah. Just based on, there's a lot of problems with the box set when it was released, but for me, it's a 10 out of 10 because I still use it. I'm still excited about it. I have 7 of these things to paint still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm living it. To me, that box set is living the dream of a box set. It's crazy. There's a lot of problems with that box set, but it's my favorite one.
Yeah, there's really not enough problems to move the needle significantly for me downwards because all of those problems are made up for by the variety, the mm-hmm. how well put together everything is, the scenario play that you get. This is a box that was re-released in 2016 by Games Workshop. Yeah. For Age of Sigmar, they just changed the name and they put some of the War Scrolls and stuff into it. And it sold out. Almost immediately.
Snag one from that era too.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they changed it to Island of Dawn or something like that.
Right.
And it sold out. I tried to get one. I couldn't.
Oh my God.
Because I remembered, I was like, oh man, yeah, I could totally use this set again. It wasn't something by the time I had the money put aside for it, it was gone. And this is a set that came out 10 years ago now. And yeah. I think if you released it today, it would still sell out. And the quality of miniatures would still hold up. And Games Workshop has done a lot of incredible miniatures in the last 10 years. And I think these are still on par with
them. They nailed it.
Yeah, they really just knocked it out of the park. I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10. The only point it loses for me is the terrain point. Otherwise, fair. I think all of its problems are very small. I don't honestly care too much about the whole high elves not working under the percentage system. For a starter product, that's not a big deal.
And you buy 2 of them.
And you buy 2 of them.
And you have a massive amount of Skaven. Yeah. And then you have a decent core of
because
the Elrion Reavers are core.
They were core, and the Lothlórien Seaguard.
And the Seaguard are just, look online, thousands of people have painted, they have pictures of the Seaguard painted.
Oh yeah, right? Well, the molded, like the details on their molded shields,
so
and
crazy.
Just, yeah, they were everything that the next generation of High Elf Spearmen should have been if they had ever gotten another kick at the can at those.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very good.
Oh, quick story there. There's a couple things. I was never a high elf player. I had my partner, she collected high elves. When did that, the 8th edition run come out? The book, I think it was 2012.
For the high elves?
For the high elves, like when they, you know, the Cutter Chariot came out.
Oh, yes,
yeah. You know,
yeah, I think that was 2012 or 2013.
2013, whatever. Yeah. She loved the model so much, we ordered from Monster Comic Lounge the entire line of new stuff.
Nice.
Because he gave us, you know, like, what was it, 20% discount or something. And it came in, and then I was in love with her, in love with these models, because we were playing Warhammer at the time. Phoenix Guard and all that stuff. Years went by, a couple of years went by, and she's like, well, I don't use these anymore. I'm going to sell them. And I was just... oh no.
Don't do that.
I didn't have the money at the time to buy them off her.
Mm.
And she ended up selling them. And ever like that very day onwards until I got these 7 Island of Bloods recently, I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
It was the best collection, and now I don't have parts of that collection anymore. I can't... You know how hard it is to get a Skycutter and a High Elf Dragon? I can't...
Oh, yeah.
That's my thing. I was able to get all the Phoenix Guard I want, all the Dragon Princes I want. Oh, obviously, the Seven Island of Bloods is... it's going to be a big army, you know?
Like yeah.
The core is there now.
Yeah.
But the key pieces I want one more box of White Lions, the High Elf Dragon, and the Skycutter Chariot, and then I'll be happy. To me, that era of GW Plastics was the best. I mean, obviously now, it's too... Remember the complaints we have about detail on a lot of the minis? Like the Sigmarine... What are they called? Sigmarines. I keep calling them Sigmarines. The
Stormcast.
It's just back then. And think of the Beastmen and their line, in my opinion, was the best between 2010 and before AOS started. That was my favorite era for just beautiful minis. Not talking nostalgia. I'm talking the way we wanted models to be, to look, and, you know, how you imagine them. And sometimes even better. Like, I can't even believe they made this model. It's amazing. Good times.
Mm-hmm. So you're going straight 10 out of 10 for the guy.
You know why?
You have seven of them. You can't wait this under 10.
I'm not done. Yeah. I'm not done of my 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I've actually done my paint schemes on one Alien Reaver, one Sea Guard. Since I've met you, I've collected a bunch of new armies. And Jesse, the vigor and zeal you guys started was...
Oh,
you know,
man.
You created a monster.
Yeah.
And you too.
I dived head first because, like, once I realized I had people to play old editions with, I was just like, I'm going to get the models from the era that I loved.
Right.
And so I have been buying any model that I have bought in the last, like, year and closing in on, like, a year and a bit now has been from those early eras, both for 40K and for fantasy. And, man, I didn't have money a year ago, and I feel like I have spent a good deal of money I shouldn't have on this stuff. But at this point, I have more of the Hero Hammer stuff nowadays than I did during
Your
the era.
Your collection is dope.
And it's gorgeous, and I'm so much happier, though, with what I own. And because every now and then I would go through these periods where I would kind of purge, right?
Yeah.
And I would get rid of a bunch of stuff. And sometimes it was due to, like, life circumstances. And sometimes it was just like, I have way too much stuff.
Yeah.
But nowadays I'm just like, no, like the things that I have, I really value. And I'm not going to, you know, other than some trades here or there, that kind of thing, I don't feel the need to throw anything up on eBay, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice. And so much of that has been brought on by having this little community to play with and, like, you know, motivate me to paint things and put them up online and yeah, just stuff like that. It's been night and day the way I collect now as to the way I collected, I mean, for most of my hobby life.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well said.
All right. I think it's about time that we wrap this up and put a bow on everything. So let's rate the Warhammer Fantasy boxes. And this is an interesting one for me because it's kind of, I might just end up going in an ascending order from the earliest to the latest.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my scores here and I had our fourth edition box at 6, the fifth edition box at 7, sixth and seventh edition at 8, and then finally I have the 8th edition box at 9 out of 10. I think I'm going to make one change to this order.
Cool.
I'm going to put the 6th edition box above the 7th edition box.
Mm-hmm.
It had less issues with the quality of miniatures. The symmetry of the forces just really speaks to me. I wish it had had like a little scenario booklet, and I do wish it had maybe another piece of terrain. But otherwise, I think of its era, it was certainly the best. And I think that edges out the Battle for Skull Pass just a little bit, in my opinion. My final list is going to be 4th edition in 5th place, 5th edition in 4th place, 7th edition in 3rd, 6th edition in 2nd place, and the top spot goes to the 8th edition starter set. Again, this is not where I thought I was going to be after this
discussion. I didn't think you were going to there either. What I know, you're a real nostalgia gamer. So
Oh my god, yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought for sure the Bretonnian set, but then you raised those points that kind of cut.
Yeah. Looking at it with my huge pop bottle nostalgia goggles, it's going to be 5th edition. Doing it as a set of what is the best introduction to the game, what is the best starter, I can't justify. Yeah, it had some real issues that I couldn't ignore. I probably should have given it a 6 out of 10, but there's only so much that I can repress my deep and abiding love for that set, so that's how it got to 7, but I'm quite happy where things turned out. Yeah, so what's your final list looking like for fantasy?
So I'll do bottom this time. So the bottom of the tier for me is 7th.
Okay.
So we go 7th, then we go 5th, then we go 6th, and then 8th.
Where did 4th fall in yours? Because you didn't say 4th.
Yes, I forgot about 4th. Yeah. You know why I forgot about 4th? I didn't have any experience with it.
That's fair. It's one that you kind of have to look at just...
Looking at the stats... It's kind of a tie between 7th and this, 4th and 7th would be a kind of a tie. Yeah, I'll just put 4th on the bottom because I am enjoying Battle for Skull Pass after all these years right now. So it's, yeah.
Fair choice.
Put 4th on the bottom from lack of knowledge.
No, I like that. I like that we've got some significant differences in our list. Let's crown maybe an overall top 3, do you think? Combining both the 40k and the fantasy list here. Looking at this, I didn't end up giving any of the 40k stuff a 9 out of 10. I feel like for that top spot, I'm going to have to put in the 8th edition fantasy Island of Blood set. I don't know that...
Yeah.
Even the newer stuff from Games Workshop doesn't quite hit all of those notes.
Mm-hmm. First of all, fantasy models are just the organic. It's so much more relatable.
I find them more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think most people do.
Yeah. Doesn't super help, though, that Games Workshop has always put Space Marines in the starters, where Space Marines are very generic and kind of almost bland by design. So you can do whatever you want with them. They're a bit of a blank canvas kind of army. And that's not a bad idea, and I do support that in a starter set, but I 100% agree with what you say in that the fantasy models are just... They have more life to them.
Here's how I look at it. It's a model versus a toy. Of course, you know, we all call them toys, but when you come down to it, 40K, they look like toys, whereas look at some of the, like, the one... You know those Wraith's Jesse posts today? Those don't look like toys. Those look like old models.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're, you know, I'm moving my Tau tanks around or my, what are they, the Rhinos. That does not look like a beautiful, organically sculpted model like you can in fantasy. The equivalent to a monster is a vehicle, you know?
Yeah, there's something a little bit G.I. Joe to...
Totally. It's fine, and it's great.
And yeah, it's a great aesthetic. Like, everyone loves G.I. Joe. Like, I played with tons of those, like, sweet vehicles back in the day kind of thing, and I do really enjoy that aesthetic. It's not... Yeah, it is a difference, though, and that's a good point.
Just think of it this way. Someone that's never seen anything like this comes to a table, and you have a big forest on the board and dragons and elves and all that stuff, or they come to the table and there's ruins with tanks. Of course, maybe you're going to like the tanks better, but you can't deny the more organic stuff just is more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's more curves, there's more depth, there's just more, there's more love to fantasy.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir with me.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's hit on our second pick. So I think this is where we'll probably start to diverge here. For this one, there's a couple strong contenders for me. I think on weight of its qualifications as a starter project, and for all of the reasons that I touched on in our last part, here is where I'm going to put the 4th edition Warhammer 40k starter set.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to go 2nd overall for me. Where do you land on this?
I'm going right to 6th edition fantasy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that set.
And I'm glad you mentioned that one, because that is going to round out my top 3. That 6th edition set, I almost wanted to put it in the second place. I just, there's something about it that is just so attractive in everything that it is. Like, it's not a huge set, but it gives you all of the things you need to explore the game.
Yeah.
It really doesn't miss on much, and it's one of those ones that had some wow factor, as well as just being a very useful box for either of those armies as well.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's going to be my roundup, my top three. Right.
Loving it.
What is your final pick?
Well, I was surprised that I was going to have a 40K one at all, but it's the Dark Vengeance set.
Ah, yeah, the Dark Vengeance set, I think, was your highest rated in our last part there.
And do you know what's funny? If you there's a lot of similarity between that and the Dark Vengeance and the Island of Blood for similar timing, but also push fit and scale.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point. They certainly are of their own era, right? Where the Island of Blood came out in 2010 and then Dark Vengeance followed in 2012. What was interesting about this little exercise is you really see how the Warhammer Fantasy boxes, where they always released first, informed the later design of the 40K boxes.
Right.
So everything that you see in the Fantasy boxes, with a few exceptions, you get again in 40K, but you almost get it as a more refined or even just a slightly changed version. Very interesting. The big exception of that being, of course, when 3rd edition 40K dropped before the 6th edition Fantasy. And apparently you need Fantasy to come out first, because otherwise you just totally screw the pooch with your 40K starter set. So
I agree. Yeah. That only happened a couple times.
Yeah, it wasn't a big thing.
Cool, that's great.
Yeah, this has
I learned a ton.
Yeah, me too. This was a really fun one to put together. Going back and just seeing what was in those starter boxes and seeing the things that I forgot were in some of those starter boxes was a lot of fun while I was putting this together. I think we'll do this again sometime with army boxes from an era, if we can track down maybe those 6th edition limited edition boxes and
do a
big kind of countdown for that.
Get those library skills in play.
See if I can if I can still find that info. This has been lots and lots of fun. Thanks everyone for listening today. And Scott and I will be back with more kind of fun episodes. That is going to be all for our starter box breakdown. I hope you've enjoyed our little nostalgic trip through the eras. Scott and I have lots of ideas for more of these fun conversational episodes, so please stay tuned for those. Also this week, I will be releasing my deep dive episode on Skaven Assassins. These dangerous Clan Eshin adepts have a rich and varied history from the Old Hammer era all the way up until the end times, and I do hope you'll join me for that. Until next time, happy wargaming. There are three things that make the Empire great: faith, steel, and gunpowder.